Welcome to episode 337 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by the Digital Media Zone. I'm your host, Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. And this is not a psych this week. Josh is not here. He is unfortunately under the weather, but I am happy to be joined by the Digital Media Zone contributor, Corey Lyons. Corey, how are you doing?
I'm well, Richard. Thanks.
It has been quite a long time since you've been on the show, and usually it's not with me. Usually you're my stand-in.
That's true. I've subbed for you in the past, but I'm happy to be serving as wingman for today's episode.
All right. Well, I'm glad that you could. We are going to dive right into it because we have a lot of news. I think we had a little feedback this week. Most of it, again, was related to guide data. So we will talk about that shortly. If we have some others, we'll get back to that in an upcoming episode. But there's a lot to cover this week. If you have feedback for us, you can send us email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. So we talked about the guide data changeover for Media Center users, and it's been problematic. The problems continue. Microsoft is still working on some things. We see that some areas are improving, but now we're still seeing that there are some geographical areas having problems. I think most recently I noticed some folks in the community posting that Chicago doesn't have very good coverage. And then what that means is that zip codes for the Chicago area are not finding lineups that will correspond to channels. So that's a problem. And one thing that a lot of people are noting is that the level of data and the types of data elements previously presented in shows just is not there. We talked about this a little bit last time, but some specifics that have come out even since then are things like data related to movies specifically. So parent ratings, the year the movie was released, the rating of the movies, as in how many stars, stuff like that. That's kind of critical when you're trying to decide if you want to watch something or not. So that's kind of disappointing. I don't remember, Corey, are you using Media Center as a DVR anywhere?
No, I haven't used that in some time as a DVR. So,
you managed to avoid this snafu.
Indeed, I have.
Right. Well, we will continue to follow this, and if there is any further news on this, and particularly any notable progress, we'll want to get that out to everybody. Now, just on the heels of this bad news, we found out, quite surprisingly, that the Netflix plugin for Media Center is being end-of-lifed. So we are expecting that we will not have this plugin available anymore after September 15th of this year. Now, I can't say this is a huge surprise because I think even as far back as one of the last times you've been on the show, we've been talking about how the data that provides and the services that provide search capabilities in this app just haven't been working. And the community has come up with workarounds, and there have been a number of people suggesting ways that Microsoft could correct this, but there's been no action. And it seems like Netflix and or Microsoft, who knows where that responsibility lies, because they're always pointing fingers at each other on this one. But this is getting shut down. Now, personally, I don't really think that this is that much of a big deal, because I don't think that the interface for this, as good as it was when it came out, has really kept up with all of the other Netflix user experiences that are available on other devices. I'm assuming that you use Netflix on something, Corey?
Oh, yeah. On more than half a dozen things, I would have to say, between mobile and tethered to televisions in my house, we are constantly on Netflix.
So what would be your preferred or favorite app for accessing Netflix? Because they're all a little bit different. I mean, there's a common kind of general organization and general look, but I tend to find that some of them are a lot easier to use or just nicer to discover content on than others.
Yeah, so I consume it most readily on both the Fire Stick and the Fire TV, since those are typically the sets we're leveraging to entertain the kids with, you know, the constant stream of various child friendly shows that you can kind of cordon them off into is what's got me visiting that. And I like the interface on the Fire TV. I mean, I would say that's probably my favorite piece of hardware in my media entourage today. So it works really well with Netflix.
Yeah. So there are lots of alternatives. It's not like you're stuck in the water if you can't use this. And certainly the Xbox has a very good Netflix add-in.
Yeah, so I pick it up on the Xbox One sometimes, but we're just not in that part of the house as frequently as we are where the other devices are. If we were hanging out in the basement a lot more, I think we'd leverage it because it's definitely the preferred device for the big screen down there, but we just leverage it on other set.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Well, let's actually take a look at what's going on the Xbox side of video entertainment. The first thing, well, let's first talk about a quick piece with a nice link bait headline that The Verge did, like that's unusual, about how the Xbox chief doesn't see much value in TV cable box features. And the conclusion that that might lead people to, if they were thinking, but wait a minute, I thought we heard that they might come out with a DVR. I mean, isn't that pretty much the cable box feature that most people are looking for? But they came to this conclusion in their interview with him that they don't see that Microsoft is going to be coming out with something like a replacement for a cable box. And I think that's a legitimate conclusion. But I don't think that that's the conclusion that the headline necessarily drew. I think the headline made us wonder, oh, maybe they aren't going to do this DVR thing after all. And then Gamescom happened this week, and we finally got the announcement that we have been expecting, that's been hinted, that we have been wanting for a long time, and that is that the Xbox One is going to get DVR capabilities. Now, there are lots of caveats to this. This is to record live over-the-air television with that recording antenna plug-in that you can have. The USB, is it a Hop-Hog tuner, I think? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the one I've seen in the US.
And then in other countries, they have a different version of the tuner. But it's going to allow you to schedule recordings like you would in a normal DVR. It's going to allow you to then peruse them. You would presumably be recording them off to an external hard drive. In fact, it's written as if it's recommended to do that, but I think it's going to be required that you do that because I don't think you're going to want to be putting that stuff on the hard drive that actually runs your system. And then you're also going to have the ability to stream the content through apps like the Smart Glass app on iOS or Android. You'll be able to stream stuff to Windows 10. And on Windows 10 devices, including phones, you're going to be able to download the shows and take them with you so that you can watch them offline. So all really good services. And it makes me ask the question, so you think we'll get that for cable someday?
Yeah, I'm curious as well, right? It's and a little bit of news to me. I'm relieved to hear that, you know, support for external drives will be there because I'm down to like something silly. I think I have 30 gig, maybe most free on my Xbox One right now. And I bought one of the launch editions, which what they only have 500 gig drives to begin with or something. Anyhow, I'm hopeful that they broaden the choices there and support more than just OTA over the air. It'll be interesting, you know, how much, you know, maybe interoperability they will do with something like a Silicon Dust or a HD Home Run and letting that still interoperate in this ecosystem somehow. So I've got to anticipate that if people, you know, were yelling from the rooftops that they wanted this feature, that continued pressure will only help, you know, broaden the chances of it doing more than just over-the-air DVR.
And one of the things in the post about this on the Xbox blog is that they're doing this and they're, you know, whether they're doing this because of or not, they're saying that this was the most requested feature for video services on the Xbox. And that's true. We know that. We've been following that for a long time. So if they really are, in fact, trying to kind of please the masses, and if it's very possible that the reason that they're not worried about Windows Media Center kind of going away with Windows 10 is because they intend to include that sort of capability, the recording capability, the DVR capabilities, the cable television access capabilities that you had through Media Center, then that would be a great thing. I think a lot of people would rejoice. I don't like the experience as much on the Xbox, but I think it's a good alternative.
Yeah, and I think you got to look at it that this is a long game for them, right? They're, you know, just continuing to really push what that platform's capable of. The games are starting to seem like the polish and the fit and finish on them is a way above where they were at first launch. So I'm cautiously optimistic that the increasing likelihood that they open this up past where they are today will be a reality someday. I think that, you know, you got to imagine that this platform from Microsoft will be around easily for the next 4 years. And so that gives us a lot of runway to work with.
Oh, easily. Yeah, for sure. Now, there's no mention of support for multiple tuners. That's not surprising because right now you can really only have one tuner on the Xbox One. But if they were to support cable, they would probably need to have more than just one tuner. Even a one tuner device would be better than no cable DVR services. And they've also made it really clear that this is a subscription-free service, that this is not something that you're going to have to pay for. So very good news. This is expected sometime in 2016. And as more news about it comes out, we'll be sure to keep people in the loop. We have a post about this that Marcus Lyons wrote out on the Digital Media Zone. Check that out if you'd like some more information. All right, well, let's wrap up our video news with some news about the Windows 10 DVD player. Now, we knew that with Media Center going away, that Microsoft was going to be providing an alternative for playing DVDs, because remember, in Windows 8, the only way that you could play DVDs was with Media Center. You couldn't just play DVDs through the media player anymore. Well, we now know what the requirements are for the Windows 10 DVD player. If you had Windows 7, are you ready for this list, Corey? If you had Windows 7 Home Premium, 7 Professional, or 7 Ultimate, or if you had Windows 8.1 with the Media Center Pack or Pro Pack, so that means that you had to have Windows 8.1 Pro to get the Media Center Pack, or if you have Windows 8 with those things and then upgrade to Windows 8.1, which is a free upgrade, then you can get the Windows 10 DVD player. And what does it do? It plays DVDs. That's it. DVDs on hard media. No ISOs. Doesn't play Blu-ray discs. DVDs. Period.
I felt like there should have been a drum roll leading up to that, but we're
yeah, it's kind of anticlimactic. I mean, I guess I didn't know what to expect, but this really does seem like a, oh, okay, fine. Here's your DVD player.
Right. I mean, optical drives are still in a lot of systems that are going to run Windows 10. So you've got to,
right.
And a lot of people are very comfortable with that format and not ready to make the leap into streaming or downloading. And if you look at broadband coverage in the US, I mean, I don't want to get on a tangent here, but it's still pretty paltry in terms of streaming a high quality video in a large portion of the US. So they've got to give them some option is what I'm getting at.
Yep. Yep. That makes sense. All right. Well, let's move on to audio. Just one quick note here. The Groove rebranding continues, and the most recent change was on iOS devices. So Xbox Music apps on the iPhone in this past week have been switched over to the Groove app. This is a pretty cool little app, actually. I'm an iPhone user. I had the Xbox Music app on my iPhone. I don't think I ever used it since the day that I loaded it, but I do have some albums there because I've bought stuff through the Music Deals app on my Windows tablet. So turns out I have stuff in my collection. I loaded the new Groove app, and it's a pretty slick experience. I'm fairly happy with it. It doesn't have any car integration that I'm aware of, other than Bluetooth. And so hopefully that'll be something that they might look at doing to integrate with car systems like Spotify and Amazon and a lot of the other music apps do. But this is a nice change, and I'm sure that by the time that we hit the end of the summer, everything once known as Xbox Music will then be Groove.
So what's funny to me about this is Microsoft had Groove before.
Did they?
Yeah, it was and I know this from my corporate world experience, it was a SharePoint integration thing.
Oh, that's right. It was actually an acquisition that they brought into the kind of enterprise office family.
Yeah, so if you Google Groove Microsoft, you get a lot of hits that are still paying homage to that in, you know, 2009 in that time frame. So I found it really interesting when they started talking about Groove that they were going to repurpose that name for something else. And I mean, it makes sense. I haven't used Xbox Music as an active subscriber, and it's got to be coming up on a couple of years, to be quite honest with you. I mean, I still have my Zune HD. That was a great experience. I loved that device.
Beautiful device.
It was. It's still one of the most spelt players you're going to find, I think. But anyway, and it was a sign of greater things to come, right? You look at all the UI cues and the things that they did that became Windows Phone experience. That was where that all started. So I will probably leverage a subscription gift card that I bought long ago for a person that had a Zune that doesn't use their Zune anymore, and fire this up and take a look at Windows 10 and how this experience integrates, because I have all these device types as well. You know, I have an Android phone, I have an iPad, I've got a couple Windows 10 devices upgraded now. So I'll probably sign back up, but I had the Zune subscription for 3 years. So I'll be encouraged to see what they did with this platform.
They have a 30-day free trial for Groove. I don't know if that's available to people who had previously subscribed to Zune or to Xbox Music. You may want to try that first.
Yeah, no, I'll give it a shot. I know I saw a trial offer or a place to redeem the code when I fired it up on my Lenovo ThinkPad Tablet 2 the other day. So I will, I'll try to do the trial and we'll see what happens. I'll let you know.
All right, good. Well, next up is gaming. And y'all should be very thankful that we have Corey here, because I'm going to need the help on this one. But it was Gamescom this week and lots of announcements. We only have some of them, actually, because as we're recording, we're really only partway through the week. But let's start off with one that we've all been waiting for. And I don't want to start a rant, Corey. Well, I kind of do. But Quantum Break. We are again hearing about Quantum Break. And I am again still confused as to what it is. But even with all that said, we're not getting it until roughly 2 years from when we first heard about it.
Yeah, I think they're definitely hedging their bet that they want to live up to the hype that they've generated, which will be a tall pole. I mean, the longer it takes, the more people's expectations of, okay, what are you really trying to deliver? But they showed a lot of footage. And again, I haven't seen some of the earlier announcements. I had heard about it, you know, maybe a year or so back when it was delayed past the strong initial launch that they were trying to shoot for with the Xbox One. But this looks really intriguing. I tell you what, I have three teenagers in the house right now. Every single one of them would absolutely be hooked by the premise of this and the interaction between the gaming world and something that, you know, uses in footage of a TV series going on and tying these to puzzles and things. I'm intrigued. I mean, I would pick it up just to see what that mechanic looks like, because I love different types of games that really push the envelope. I'm a big Ingress player and some of these things, these genres that get created that, you know, technology today now just lets you really explore things that 5 years ago, all of us would have been like, how are you going to pull that off?
I guess what I'm still trying to figure out is that when they first announced this, or at least when they talked about this at the big E3 unveil, which was about a year and a quarter ago now, they talked about how this was going to be a combination of an in-house produced series, live action series, and a game. And I think the impression that people got from that is that it was going to be something like the formula used for Defiance. Defiance, the sci-fi series where they have a television series that follows a storyline, and then there's a parallel storyline going on in a game. Now, in that scenario, they supposedly affect each other. Neither the game nor the TV series has really done all that well. But I kind of thought that that's what we were looking at, a TV series that maybe was only going to be available to watch on Xbox, and this game that was tied into it. Now it seems like the video footage, if you want to call it that, is somehow integrated into the gameplay and not a separate thing, not like a series that you might go watch. Is that your impression too?
Yeah, I definitely get a sense that they're stitching things in versus you're going to record something, you're going to watch it, you're going to look for clues, and then you're going to go back and play the game and things are getting uncovered. They definitely seem like they were trying to integrate the two experiences into one, which honestly causes a little bit of an uncanny valley thing for me that may prove problematic, right? Because still a gap between the digital rendering of the person and the actual actors themselves. So we'll see how they handle it. I mean, it's definitely an interesting idea. If they can pull it off and it gets people to watch the show and advertising associated with that and all that, that's going to be a big win for them. So we'll see how this plays out.
They also announced the cast for this, the show, the series, the video, the game, whatever. And that includes a number of names that you'll recognize from other science fiction shows in the past. So overall, pretty interesting, something we're still going to be watching. We'll have a link to the information for that in the show notes. Now, the real meat of the event comes in a ton of announcements about the lineup of games that they have coming out. And you are probably far more familiar with these in general than I am, but we're talking about Halo Wars, we're talking about the Halo World Championship, more talk about Rise of Tomb Raider, FIFA 16, Rainbow Six Siege, a whole bunch of stuff. What really caught your attention here?
Well, to be honest with you, and I was kind of sold on what Titanfall was supposed to be doing in terms of back-end processing with the Microsoft Cloud. And one of them that caught my eye was really the Crackdown 3 comments. And again, I know it's link bait and all that, but you look at if they're really making an entire world destructible and they're somehow leveraging the compute in the cloud to make those physics and all that possible, I really want to see something where it's like, they should almost give you a demo button to do this. Like, hey, shut off the cloud connection, see what the game would look like. That would go a long way to convincing people what the power of that means for the future proofing of this platform. So I'm bullish on that. I like that. It kind of ties into one of the things we were talking about earlier, that with Just Cause, that was one of my favorite things to do, is just go around, trash the environments in Just Cause. And Just Cause 3 was one of the other ones that they covered a little more in depth, where every mod thing that you were going to do on the PC version of that, they brought to fruition in the console version of this as well, just making over the top explosions and destructions and dragging people around by these really grapple hook things. It looks like a ton of fun for me. My 17-year-old and I, we were talking about this, I'm like, doesn't this look amazing? And absolutely. And one of the other things I found interesting is it links to the Just Cause announcement, and something I know we're going to see more of, right, is previous versions of the titles with the backwards compatibility that they've talked about on Xbox One. So they mentioned this Just Cause 3 will get the prior version, Just Cause 2, in a bundle when you buy that on the Xbox One, and you'll be able to access that older revision of the game through its backwards compatibility, which I'm looking forward to. I mean, especially, you know, as I get a few minutes here or there to play games, but certainly seeing the increases in what the capabilities have been from prior gen to this gen, and having kids experience kind of the good old days, even though those are like 20 or 30 years ago, in my opinion, of gaming, is a cool value add that the platform is going to bring. So I'm looking forward to that, certainly. I think the other ones that caught my eye, Halo World. Yeah, I mean, I loved Command and Conquer. I like that genre. I don't know if I'm going to get into it the same way people like would get into Warcraft, and certainly you know, StarCraft and those types of strategy simulations, but there's a big prize pool out there. So making that the next big e-sport, a la Dota and some of these other things that draw huge crowds and lots of money, I'll probably keep my eye on what it means. And Rise of Tomb Raider, I think that one looks really good. I saw some of the trailers for that when they announced that was going to be Xbox One exclusive for a little while. I was floored, you know, as most of the PlayStation faithful were, I'm sure. Maybe I'll pick that one up, but more than anything anymore, I'm a casual gamer. If I can walk through some campaign offline or do some light online stuff, that's why I don't pick up Titanfall, to be honest with you, much anymore. I mean, it's a great looking game and all that, but I kind of like the experience of being able to do it at my own pace and not have the matching sequences take as long as they seem to. You know, there's no such thing as a 20-minute game of Titanfall. It's more like 10 minutes getting everything ready to play, and then you're maybe 15 minutes of gameplay, and you're getting whomped on most of the time by some person that, you know, has a much higher pitched voice. Anyway, so that's it at a macro level. I mean, Gears of War, you know, I played that a handful of times, and there's another one that's going to leverage the backwards compatibility stuff. So looking forward to that, and certainly maintaining my Xbox Live Gold subscription as long as I have. If they go back and grandfather me into all those titles that I, you know, didn't hook up my Xbox 360 to download, I'm all for that. That's great. Bring it on.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the backward compatibility. We got some news about what game houses are going to be supporting backwards compatibility. And among those are Bethesda, Disney, EA, Sega, Capcom, Warner Brothers, Ubisoft. So a lot of the big names there. Not all the names that everybody wants to see yet, but still some good progress. And if we get as many games as we're thinking as backwards compatible and able to play in this kind of compatibility mode, I really think that's going to be a great thing for a lot of people. Because now I don't play these games, but I own a bunch of them, and I have an Xbox One, I have an Xbox 360. I haven't turned my Xbox 360 on as a gaming device for a while. In fact, the only Xbox 360 that I have in my house is in my office, and I use it as a streaming device. And I'm not going to play games in here if I were to, but to be able to play the games that I'd purchased back on my Xbox One would be a really nice thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, the reason my kids are clamoring on the Xbox 360, to be quite honest with you, is all the time they spent on Minecraft on that platform that hasn't found its way into the new stuff. So, you know, if Microsoft gave them an ability to just port their worlds from the old version to the new, there would be no need to hook up the 360, I'll be quite honest. But we dug an old tube-based television out. I'm going to hook up my 360 to that and my original modded Xbox, and we're going to do some classic emulated gaming on that sucker in the near future.
Good stuff. There's still more news from GamesCon, and the other thing that we heard about is some more information about the new experience in the Xbox One. Now, Josh and I talked about this a little bit earlier, and I'm not all that excited about the new UI. I hope that it's going to be better than the demonstration that we saw, but they talked specifically about some of the new areas in the new Xbox experience. The new community, well, the enhanced community area is going to have activity feeds, and what's trending on Xbox Live is going to help you directly get to things where a lot of people are gathering and what a lot of people are watching or doing. A new watch section. And I don't know about you, but I think this is the most intriguing thing that they've talked about with the new experience. A new watch section is going to aggregate and make it easier to discover TV and movie content. This, I think, is critical, because right now, to find content, you have to know what app to go to, or you have to use Bing and go through a series of 5 or 6 selections to get to the point where you actually are in an application to watch the episode of whatever it was that you wanted to see. And if they can make that more unified and easier to use and provide some sort of maybe curation for that content, I think that would be incredibly valuable.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that they're really going to have to move swiftly. It was a big boon to Microsoft, in my opinion, that Apple didn't launch their revamp of TV already. And Microsoft will never have a second chance at doing this and winning some portion of those folks to still leverage this as the main box they interact with in their living rooms and family rooms. I mean, if they could do this and they can do it with voice search and, you know, search from your computer and, oh, I'm going to pop this content up just like Smart Glass will let you do and some other things. If they start to, again, make that a more cohesive ecosystem. So I can say Cortana on my Windows 10 box, when's the next episode of Game of Thrones going to be on? And it knows that I've got an HBO Go subscription and, oh, would you like to, you know, watch that downstairs in your Xbox One? Abso-friggin-lutely, let's go, you know, and make that, make it a two button clicks or, you know, whatever the minimum amount you would need to do, as opposed to the very frustrating, I totally agree with you. I'm going to search Bing. Oh, you can, you know, get it from these three spots. This one, it's free. Launch the app, yada, yada, away you go. And still, it's every bit of 2 or 3 minutes before you're, you know, in there and viewing content. It'll be a big win for them.
Yeah, let's hope they do this right, because I think you're right. This is their opportunity to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now they're also improving the One Guide. They're going to be providing more information in the One Guide. I hope that means that they're augmenting the data that we're getting from Roe v. We know, we were just talking earlier, that the Roe v. data is not as good as the data that they had been getting on Media Center from Zaptuit. So hopefully that means that that data is going to be improved too. But also, they're going to be improving the store and making that easier to use. I'm really, really unhappy with the store on the Xbox One. I think it is a terrible experience.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not in love with it by any stretch. I mean, I bought two things digitally on that platform. Most recently, Far Cry 4. That was an okay experience. I mean, it was one of those advertised specials with games for gold, so it was only a few hops away from the main screen. But yeah, any other time I've contemplated purchasing content through that, I agree with you. It's not been like a, oh, let me do this again type of experience. That was so easy. It was, you know, awesome. They have some opportunity to improve. And if I take a step back for a second, and I should go and check One Guide now just to have a better baseline of what they're going to iterate to in the front end changes. One Guide on its initial launch was so slow compared to my receiver.
Right.
Hopefully they keep improving the speed of that is all I'm getting at.
There's no reason why they shouldn't be able to. I mean, I think that we've seen some improvements to it as it's been out, and I haven't been using it since the first launch, but I know that Josh has been using it and others tend to like it now. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do here. I think there is a lot of opportunity to make these things a lot better and to ultimately make this the one-stop destination in people's entertainment center. All right, one final thing in gaming is that we heard a little bit more news about the hardware that we'd heard about at E3, specifically the Elite controller. It is now available for pre-order, along with a chat pad, like a physical add-on that you can attach to an Xbox controller that looks a whole lot like, well, did you ever have a BlackBerry pager?
Oh, yeah.
It looks almost exactly like that, but it's designed to fit on the controller. And these are both available for pre-order now, and they will both be available in November.
Did you use the chat pad on the 360 controller ever, Richard?
I didn't. I didn't.
So I have one of those for my 360. And honestly, I prefer that experience. A lot of times firing those messages off with that was a really convenient way to communicate. It's definitely trumps, you know, using the on-screen keyboard. That drives me bonkers. So I would pick one of these
up just
for the enhancement to the rest of the experience and the other apps on the Xbox One, for instance, that don't support the voice translations and some other things. So I think there's going to be a strong reception for this. I really do. You know, especially the kids in the texting generation, they're going to be all over this thing because, you know, how often are they going to preference doing that versus the on-screen? This will be an old hat to them, just firing off messages left, right, and center with that versus the kludgy way you have to do it today, unless you've got like a keyboard tethered to it.
Yep. No, for sure. I agree. And finally, before we get off games, I wanted to give a reminder that it is now August, and the Games with Gold specials that we were talking about in our last episode, those are now available. So again, we'll have a link to those in the show notes. Go check them out, download them, get them onto your account. Even like me, if you don't know you're going to play them, you might as well get them. Maybe someday you will. And they're free, so that's good. All right, that's it for gaming. I did the best that I could, but hopefully Corey got us through that one. I think so. Let's talk about mobile. And the only news that we have in mobile really is about Windows 10 on Windows Phone. And we know it's coming. We know it's coming sometime this fall. We still don't know when exactly. But what we do know now is that there are 10 phones that are first going to get the Windows 10 update. I wonder if they did that on purpose. Okay. Are you ready for this list?
Fire them off.
All right. This is quite a diverse list, so stay with me. It is the Lumia 430, the Lumia 435, the Lumia 532, the Lumia 535, the Lumia 540, the Lumia 640, the Lumia 640 XL, the Lumia 735, the Lumia 830, and the Lumia 930.
Which one does Josh have now?
Yeah, he doesn't have any of those. And I don't have any of those. Neither of our phones are in that list.
Sorry. I that was a loaded question. I was like, I bet you these guys don't have either one of these. But anyway, I'll ask. So, all right, guys.
Yeah, I have the 635 for testing.
Mm-hmm.
He has the 1020, which is the one with that awesome camera. And yeah, they're not here. So
someday,
you know, they're going to get the update. Yes. But it's just not in the first wave.
I mean, these are all, what, their most recent gen then? Or
yeah, that's, yeah. I mean, and we knew that that's what they were going to target. They were going to target the platform that they knew was going to be the most stable and then expand from there. So no big surprises. Still frustrating, though.
Yeah, so, and I don't mean to digress totally off base, but how are they releasing this with the different carriers versus what, like, an Apple does? Just help me understand that piece real quick. Are they having to go through certification? So like an AT&T version of a Lumia device that may also be on the Verizon network, if there is such an animal, are they going to get them at the same time? Have they talked about any of that?
I think that's funny that you think there are any current Verizon devices.
I'm not up to speed. My bad.
No, actually, I think one of those might be. But as I understand it, and I don't know the details on this, but as I understand it, this is not going to go through the same, let's say, testing and transmogrification process that the earlier releases of Windows updates went through when they went out to the phones. In the past, the update would go out to the provider, and then the provider would have their opportunity to put their own little spin on it and test it and make sure that it worked to their liking, and then it would go out. It's not going to work that way anymore. They are supposed to be putting these out all at the same time. So I don't know if that means that they're doing preliminary testing in advance with the providers or what, but the providers are supposedly not going to be holding these releases up the way they have in the past.
Gotcha. Okay, good to know.
And hopefully it really works that way.
Yeah, so for the record, I had to check. There is the Lumia 735 as a Verizon device.
All right. Okay, there you go.
All right.
All right. Well, that is it for Microsoft News this week. One interesting thing to note, we occasionally talk about other DVR news, and Dave Zatz over at Zatz Not Funny, really the leading tech news site for information on DVRs and TiVo news, is talking about the upcoming announcement for a TiVo Bolt DVR, a new generation of the TiVo. And it's expected any day now. And he seems to have found some accidentally pre-published images that the webmaster managed to leak on the TiVo website before they were supposed to go live. So he is on top of this. And I think it's interesting that we're still seeing some innovation in the DVR space and a real commitment from TiVo to the home DVR when you still hear, you know, I don't know if you listen to tech podcasts regularly, but even today, I heard on two different shows, people talking about how, oh, DVRs, that's so cute. That's so 2000. And I'm thinking, you people are in a bubble. Like, we're still at the stage where cable, which is still the number one provider of television to the people in this country who receive television, is still growing their share of DVR users versus standard cable box users. Mm-hmm. So why the tech press has this idea that DVRs are dead is just beyond me.
Yeah, no, and I mean, a sad state of affairs, right? In my household, we're totally hooked on that in the ecosystem we bought into. I mean, my wife's like, we can't cancel cable. I know how to work the DVR here, right? And so it's part of the cable bundle. I mean, you're paying for that receiver, you're paying for the support for that. And yeah, it's DVR is a big feature that most people are looking for if they're going to spend a couple extra bucks on their subscription. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. All right. Well, that is it for news. We like to wrap things up by talking about what's going on in our entertainment centers. I am not currently planning on buying a new TiVo, but I do record a lot of stuff on my TiVo and on my media center, and I've been watching a lot of television. Not as much as over the last 2 weeks, but, you know, my guilty pleasure, Big Brother, been keeping up with that. I also picked up another show that I kind of left halfway a couple years ago, not because I didn't like it, but there was so much other stuff on that I wanted to watch and I didn't have time to watch it. And that is an old sci-fi series called Eureka. You ever watch this, Corey?
No, I was actually looking it up on Google. So fill me in.
It's a pretty cool concept. The idea is that a bunch of really brilliant people all live in some relatively unknown town in the middle of the country and operate a big think tank that's government funded and do all these crazy scientific experiments that kind of push the bounds of physics. And most every episode is about something based on the laws of physics that we know today could never happen. So, you know, hence sci-fi. But it's a fun show, actually. It's not a serious show. It's just kind of a fun, quirky show, something that a friend of mine had told me about years ago. I started watching and I've enjoyed it, but I lost track of it for a while. So now back on season 4, hoping to finish that up soon. And before I get to my podcast pick, I wanted to talk a little bit about Windows 10, because last we spoke, I didn't have Windows 10 on any of my devices. In fact, nothing but my media center was offering me the Windows 10 upgrade. And well, I don't want it there, obviously, but I did want it on my Stream A tablet, because that's a tablet that I bought specifically for testing and to use Windows 10. Now, I finally got through the invitation process there and got tired of waiting. So I went to the place on Microsoft's website, and we'll have a link to it in case you don't already have it, where you can download the media creator that doesn't just create DVDs or thumb drives of installation disks, but actually allows you to just install directly from a file. And I did that, and I now have Windows 10 on my tablet. Are you running Windows 10 on anything yet?
So yeah, I've done both flavors of installation, actually. So I had the Insider Preview, and I upgraded a Windows 8.1 ThinkPad tablet to a Lenovo device. So it's Bay Trail, which I looked up the HP Stream 8. Bay Trail definitely is, I mean, this device is every bit of a couple years old. It's getting the hurt put on it a little bit by Windows 10. and so, like I said, I just let it upgrade through the Insider Preview and all that. So I'm on the final build now. And then I did build the ISOs. So you can go to Microsoft, some web link, and tell it I want the 32-bit version and the 64-bit version. And then they craft a URL, they say, that's only good for 24 hours, that you then pull those ISOs down. So I've logged into my MSDN subscription. I've pulled down the enterprise version through there as well, because the version that I did from that initial link, if this isn't too confusing, I apologize, was just one that, you know, they want the product key. So I just had an old HP ProBook around. So it's like that one's probably 3 years old, but it had 4 gigs of RAM, a 2000 series i5 in it. And I threw it on there and upgraded the product key with my MSDN subscription. And it upgraded the instance of Windows. So I've done a clean install and an upgrade, and I've got to say it definitely runs better on the even a 3-year-old i5 than it does a 2-year-old Bay Trail with 2 gigs of RAM in the one system and 4 gig in the other. So I've got it on a couple boxes. Like I shared with you earlier, I haven't streamed anything. I'll probably try the Xbox One streaming to the HP laptop that I've got that I upgraded or I installed fresh, and we'll see how well that stuff works. But yeah, early indications are Cortana's okay. She's definitely a little flaky, doesn't always hear you well, and you need one of those mics to do it. I think do it right, but well, the jury's still out for me. I'll probably stick with it. I don't know if I'm going to upgrade a handful of other family members' devices to this quite yet or not, but we'll go from there.
I think from a desktop user's perspective, I like what I see. I think that they've created a pretty nice desktop upgrade. It's contemporary, it's fast, it's better organized than a lot of the stuff had been in the past. But I do not like the tablet experience. And I'm not trying to parrot what has already been said by Josh, but I've been using it now, and I liked the Windows 8 and 8.1 tablet experience. I thought they came up with a really good touch-first experience, and I kind of feel like they ruined it. I don't want a taskbar at the bottom of my tablet. I don't want a task switcher at the bottom of my Windows tablet, because I know that I can swipe in, and I can still do that to switch between applications, except now all it does is it brings up the same thing that pressing the task switch button on the ever-present taskbar would do. It bugs me. It bugs me for a couple reasons. It bugs me for the, and sorry to get on the soapbox again, but the same thing that I've been saying for years is that Microsoft needs to get over this idea that they need one operating system for touch and desktop. It is not going to work for them. And the other thing is that I really, really liked what they built before for tablets. And so, you know, I had questioned whether I would ever upgrade my good tablet, my Lenovo ThinkPad, to Windows 10. And I know now I am absolutely not going to do it. It's going to stay at Windows 8.1 because I think that's a much better tablet experience for the way that I use my tablet.
What, how many inch screen is on your Lenovo device?
The Lenovo, I believe, is a 10 inch screen.
Yeah, that's,
I'm not sure on that. I'm going to have to check on that. I don't remember. It's the Lenovo that we saw when we were at CES, and I was drooling over it. It's the ThinkPad 2. It may actually be an 8-inch now that I think about it.
Does it have a keyboard or no?
No, it does not have a keyboard.
I think we may have the same device, but we'll take that offline. I mean, because I carried one the year I was at CES with you guys.
Yeah. This is the one that they were showing that year and eventually came out with at the end of the year. And I really like it. The battery life is the most miserable thing ever. It's inexcusable, and I now know why they're not selling it anymore. But it's a really nice piece of hardware besides that. And if I charge it every night, then I can use it when I want to for my daily, you know, morning news and whatever else I'm going to do on it. So,
gotcha.
All right. Well, every week we like to do a podcast pick, and this week it is my turn. And I am going to recommend a podcast called Marketplace. And Marketplace is actually kind of a syndicated public radio show, and it's a part of a series of shows that they have. But this one specifically is a daily, roughly half-hour show about what's going on in pretty much the business world. It's not all business. It goes into tech. It goes into human interest. It goes into politics. But the reason that I started listening to it is because I am a huge fan of Molly Wood. Molly Wood, formerly from CNET, and then with the New York Times, and now with APM, who does the Marketplace radio shows and podcasts. And she was subbing on this one week, and I'm like, all right, I'll listen to this and see. And I really like the show, and I listened to the main show with the main commentator, Kai Rizdahl. This is probably the most informed I've been on daily news ever, because usually I only listen to tech shows. And now I actually know what's going on in the news, too. It's kind of interesting. So if anyone's interested in that, we'll have a show note link. So please check that out. Corey, what have you been watching? What have you been doing in your entertainment center?
So admittedly, I am a little behind on the times. Most of the content I watch is streaming through Netflix or something like that. I have a DVR. I actually started recording Mr. Robot, which I heard nothing but good things about.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. So I'm gonna go on vacation here yet this summer. So this is on the to-do list. When I'm on vacation, I'm going to bring my iPad. I'm going to watch a handful of episodes and credits that I have that I got grandfathered into when Apple deprecated out one of the purchases I had made in the past. And they're like, I'm sorry, we can't give you this game that you bought eons ago, but we can give you 3 TV episodes. And I'm like, well, I'll take you up on that. So I'm going to start Mr. Robot. I've got the other episodes already stored on my DVR. So when I get back, I'll have additional ones of those to watch. But like I said, super excited about that. And this other one, and when we were discussing this earlier, my wife is watching, binge watching, if you will, Friday Night Lights.
And I
have caught myself where I normally can just, you know, absolve myself of trying to watch any of those types of things when she's just, you know, back to back watching certain things. That this one's kind of getting its hooks into me. So we'll see. I know you were a big fan of that. And you said it got you actually interested in football and such.
Well, I mean, what's funny is that, you know, I went to Penn State. And when I was at school, I didn't know anything about football. And when you're at Penn State, you kind of bleed football. I mean, it's just all about the football. And so I graduated caring about Penn State and college football in a way like I never did. And never got into high school football. But when I watched Friday Night Lights, and Friday Night Lights, I think, is a really good, well-written, well-acted drama without being soap opera-y. But at the same time, it's also about a sports team. And they would choreograph and film these episodes with football games that seem like you're really watching the commentated football game live. And I would find myself like cheering for the team while I'm watching this TV show. It was crazy.
Yeah, I would think that's one of the things that actually made me take pause, you know, and not the drama pieces, even though I think some of the stories and what I picked up on that the characters are doing. And, you know, you got the sappy guy that's in love with the older girl and some of that other stuff. But yeah, when the footage is on about the football stuff, not that I'm the biggest football zealot on the planet, far short of that. It does get your attention. So you're drawn to that piece, certainly. And I have, even in the, you know, 10-minute, 5-minute snippets I end up getting exposed to this show, find myself rooting just like you did for those those folks and not having them get in a losing situation. And then did you see the Alamo Drafthouse cameo that the coach did? He does the like PSA in front of a movie. So for folks that are fans of the Friday Night Lights, if they haven't heard of this already, I did watch the PSA. I thought it was kind of entertaining. And I don't know the actor's name, but he's in his coach persona and he tells people to, you know, pay attention, shut off your cell phones. And then he's talking to like a group of people in a room. And as the coach, he's like, really, folks? And, then at the end, they do the whole, cheesy, smack the Alamo Draft House logo instead of the Panther logo on a brick wall. So
that's cool.
It is cool. Yeah. So those are the two things that I am watching on the large screen. How's that?
All right. That's pretty good. Well, that's going to be it for us this week. Before we wrap up, though, some quick announcements. I mentioned this last week before I went on, but I was on last weekend's PopTech Radio talking about why you may not want to yet upgrade to Windows 10, and also talking a little bit more about the good and bad of HomeKit. And it's very likely I'll be on again this weekend talking a little bit more about some of the specific HomeKit products. Then I am also going to be talking about HomeKit and the surprise news about Winx CEO and much more on this weekend's Smart Home Show with Mike Wolf. So if you're into any of those, give them a listen. We'll have links in the show notes. Well, Corey, this was great. I can't believe that this is the first time that you and I have ever had a chance to do this together. We've done the three-person show with Josh before, but never just the two of us.
That's right. Well, have me back again sooner than the amount of time it took to do this.
Well, usually what happens is Josh doesn't like to leave me alone behind the mic, so I don't know how often I'm going to get this chance.
Well, always reach out to me if the opportunity presents itself. Fair enough.
All right. Well, this was a lot of fun, so thanks for joining us. How can people, hear more about what you're up to?
So, every once in a while, I post on Google+. I assure you that platform is not dead.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Not dead. Just like Glass. Not dead.
Not dead. Glass is, honestly, I think everybody's going to be pretty surprised what the next iteration of that is. I do quite a bit of stuff around the Google things on the side, so I'm bullish on what that'll be. But so Google+, follow me there. I do every once in a while hit up Twitter. I'm at Corey Lyons with an E and a Y. So hopefully that makes sense. And those are the best two ways to see what I'm up to.
All right, great. Well, you can reach me at Richard Gunther on Twitter. Josh's name on Twitter is Josh Pollard. Easy enough. We are on Twitter as DG Media Zone, DIGI Media Zone. We're also on Facebook. We're also in Google+. We have the Windows Media Center community on Google+. Please check that out if you're interested in what's going on with other Media Center users. Lots of talk on there these last couple of weeks. No surprise. If you want to get in touch with us, use the contact form on the website or leave us an email message at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. We have other shows that may be of interest to you. The End User on summer schedule right now, so not quite sure when the next episode of that is going to hit, but it is still around. Do not despair. Meanwhile, Home On continues, and in the most recent episode, a colleague of mine, Joe Johnston, who's a user experience expert, talks a lot about the current and future of user experience in the smart home. And coming up, an episode I recently recorded with Men's Health tech correspondent Greg Stebbin. Then, if you like what you're hearing, let us know. And this is really, really important. You can find us in all these different places, iTunes, even in the Zune Marketplace. We're on Stitcher Radio. We're on Pocket Casts. We're on TuneIn Radio. But if you like it, leave us some stars. Let us know, because giving us a rating helps gain exposure and helps let other people know about the show. We normally record live on Tuesdays. This week we were not live, but we will be back next week. Always check Twitter for the latest and greatest recording times if you'd like to join us in the chat room. It's a lot of fun to have conversation with our listeners while we're recording. That's going to do it for episode 337. I'm Richard Gunther. He's Corey Lyons. I'll be back next time with Josh Pollard for episode 338. Until then, goodbye.
Bye.